to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. Coming up in the second and the third block, we will talk to the folks with Tim Timmerman, Hope of America. It's a new movie that comes out on the 3rd of March. We'll talk with Travis Rigby and Cameron Sawyer. So we'll talk to them. But right now, I wanted to follow up. It's been fun to kind of hear some voices from the past here in the Cultural Hall. And right now, from episode 17 and then every episode for a while until she moved, it's Pizza Face herself, Ashley Garvey Smith. Hello.
Oh, I just love that nickname. I really do.
You know, the thing is, and you can go back and listen to the genesis of it, I didn't give you the nickname.
I know. I told you about a very personal problem that I had with
acne. Which you don't have. Which
I do.
No, which you don't have. I looked. You had it kind of one time. And because I know you're sensitive to it, and because I like to think that me taking people's sensitivities and continuing to talk about them makes it some sort of close relationship, I continue.
Yes, you do. And and luckily we are good enough friends that it does not offend me.
Good. So. Good. I want to check in with you. It's been a couple years since you were a regular here in the Cultural Hall. You still kind of communicate with everyone. But for people who may be wondering, hey, you know what? I wonder what happened to Ashley Garvey Smith. What is happening?
So I am currently in my second year of law school at BYU Law.
Okay. And that's the Lord's University. So we can just say it that way. But
yeah, it is. I mean, it really is. Although... I graduated with my undergrad from the University of Utah.
Oh, so personally conflicted, yes. Then. That's what that is. Cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. So that's where I am. I have two children, two boys, an 8-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I'm trying to do law school and be a mom at the same time. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of hard work. Harder than you can ever imagine unless you've been in law school, then you can imagine it.
So what's so hard about it? The amount of studying you have to do?
Yeah, that's part of it. But also, I think the hardest thing for me, and then, you know, I'm a non-traditional student. So I'm a mom. I'm older than a lot of these other law school students that come. And for me, the competitiveness, because for people who don't know, everything in law school is graded on a curve. And so you are literally competing with all of your classmates for grades. And they continue to tell you that if you're not in the top 30%, you're not going to get a good job, which actually is not true.
Okay.
But that's what they try and tell you. And so, you know, statistically, 70% of you are not going to be in the top 30%. And that's kind of how math works. Right. So, the fear of being in that bottom 70% can kind of get to you. And the competitive nature of law school it can be emotionally draining. So, you know, I was in that the first year and kind of got involved in that, but then realized it didn't really matter. And so I've been enjoying law school a lot more after not focusing on that competitive aspect and the fact that grades are such a main focus of law school.
Well, and the other part of that is people that will know you will know that you are, how do we say something like this delicately? A perfectionist is not word.
That might be, some people have called me an overachiever, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, so, but this is the thing. Everyone in law school is. Everyone you go to law school with was valedictorian of their high school class and their college class. And everyone that you go to law school with got 4.0s in their undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
So you are in law school with 150 other people just like you, which makes it fun and also really horrible sometimes.
It sounds exhausting.
It is exhausting.
Like just being around people like that all the time would just be exhausting to me. Forget the studying and all the work that goes with it. Just exhausting.
It is exhausting, but I think I have an advantage because I have a different perspective than a lot of my classmates. And I have been through enough in my life to understand that some things are so trivial and they really don't matter. My law school grades are not, they don't make me who I am. And I mean, which is really cliche and it seems obvious, mm-hmm. but you would be surprised at how many people base their worth on where their ranking is in the law school class. So fortunately, I have a perspective. I get to go home to my kids and my family after school every day, and that is a lot more important than what grades I'm getting.
Now, for people who don't know or certainly don't remember, maybe you're a lifer or maybe you're just a convert here to the Cultural Hall, Ashley Garvey Smith, a very talented musician, and being a lawyer seems so very different from that realm, right? From the very creative to the very structured yes. and organized, and there is a right and a wrong, whereas you know, we creatives, if I can lump myself into that group, kind of go, no, mm-hmm. there's no right or wrong. It's your experience. There's not a right or a wrong here where law school would say differently.
Yes. Well, you would be surprised at how many musicians and artistic types are actually in law school. A lot of people say it's a right brain, left brain thing, but I think it's a good balance. And people who have gone to law school will tell you that the answer to everything is it depends, which is actually really great for someone like me who is creative. And, you know, I was an English major, a liberal arts major. So while law school might seem like this very, you know, which one is the logical side?
That's your left brain. Yep.
Yeah. So I think you would be surprised to know that there are a lot of right-brained people in law school that are more creative, because I think you have to be. Like, I think you have to be able to see both sides of the coin for every issue that you look at. So it hasn't been such a tough transition for me.
Are you glad you're doing it?
Yes, I think it has been the best decision I have made for so many reasons. And honestly, I was really surprised at how much coming here strengthened my testimony in a lot of different aspects.
Okay, talk about it.
So before I came, I wouldn't call it a faith crisis at all. I had a lot of doubts about certain things that I think a lot of us do when we're lifers in the church. And
Give me an example. We're speaking kind of vague. Give me like an example. You were like, well, this is hard. This thing. What's a thing that was hard?
Okay. A thing for me was some aspects of the Joseph Smith story, which mm-hmm. I think they're common things that other people struggle with.
Okay.
And for me, it wasn't something that, you know, rocked my faith. It wasn't something where it was like, if this is true or not true, I'm going to leave the church.
Right.
It wasn't anything like that. However, coming to law school it's done a couple of things. It's taught me to think critically about things and, realize that there are some things that matter to some of us and some things that don't. And I think it's something that we have to individually search out for ourselves. And that's something that coming to law school has helped me do. It's also put me around a lot of like-minded people who might have the same questions, but still have the desire to stay in the church. And, you know, when you go to BYU Law, you do have to go to church. Now, they do accept people who are not LDS. We have some Muslims in my mm-hmm. class. But if you were baptized and you go to BYU Law, you have to go to church.
What's the requirement? Like a couple times a month or every week, or what's the deal?
Well, you have to get an ecclesiastical endorsement, like okay. you do if you're on the main campus. So that's essentially up to your bishop and your stake president, I think. But I think there's not like a bright line rule, but they usually say, 50 to 75% of
okay.
the time
okay.
you need to be there. And so So not only did it force me to actually go to church, but it put me around a lot of like-minded people that had a lot of similar questions, that I was allowed to have these open discussions with, which you can't always do, you know, in church or with your neighbors. And on top of that, people say this, and I kind of laughed about it before I came to BYU, but there really is a special feeling here. And I know that's going to sound really squishy, but it exists. And it's helped me a lot, having the Spirit with me.
That's awesome. I want to ask you one last question, then I want to let you go, because you should be studying right now, and you know it.
Yes, I should.
If you're going to be in that top 30 percentile, you're going to have to make up for this time that you're spending with me right now.
Yeah.
There are both men and women who are listening to this who have a couple of kids at home, and their desire is to go back to school. They're not happy with their job or their current level of education where they're at, and a lot of people put that in the category of a someday. You put that mm-hmm. you put that category into now.
Yep.
Talk about how you make that work and if that is worth it.
Okay, I think there are a lot of factors that you have to consider. And for me, it was a very personal decision. It was something I prayed about very hard for many years. I wanted to go to law school for 10 years before I actually went. And so it wasn't something that I just woke up one day and said, I'm going to go to law school. So I think you have to have a desire and know that that's what you really want to do, because there are things that you're going to sacrifice. You are going to sacrifice time with your family, and your kids are going to have to make sacrifices, and your spouse is going to have to make sacrifices. So it's something that you have to talk to your family about at length and make sure that everyone is on board, because I have seen a lot of moms come to law school and their families are not on board, and it's been a struggle. And, you know, I don't really care about the judgment that other people have placed on me because I'm a mom going to law school, or because I'm a mom working. It happens. It exists, and it's something that you just have to know is there, and you have to decide that that's not going to deter you from actually achieving your dreams. So for me, it was something that my family was on board with. It was something that I knew that was going to be best for my family. Once I am done with law school and I get a job, it's going to be a very good thing for my family. Mm-hmm. And everyone in my family agreed. It's a very personal decision, and I think only you and your family and Heavenly Father can be the ones that make that decision. And I felt that I was divinely inspired to come to law school. And I know a lot of people here who actually believe that as well. So... And there have just been a lot of miracles that have happened since coming, and so it just continues to be something that I know is the right thing for me and for us and my family.
One last question. Law school gets done. What's the first thing you're going to do?
Go on a cruise.
Where are you going? Where are you cruising to?
I think we're going to do a Disney cruise, because my kids have had to sacrifice a lot, so they deserve a really great vacation.
Ashley Garby-Smith, attending BYU Law and former host here on the Cultural Hall. Thanks for taking a few minutes and letting us catch up with you. And it's great to have your story. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Richie.
Now go study, all right?
All right, I will.
Top 30.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Dan the Laptop Man here, and it's time for another PC Laptop's Bedtime Story. Once upon a time, Brian was looking for a new computer. He searched far and wide from north to south, and even took his quest online. But he had yet to find the PC of his dreams, and was feeling sad. If only I could find the perfect computer with a lifetime warranty to match, he thought to himself. But then Brian stumbled upon a magical store with a friendly staff and a selection galore. Inside, he knew he had found what he'd been searching for all along. A blazing fast PC with a lifetime warranty his heart had desired. Brian returned home, his new PC laptop's desktop in tow. And should it come time to upgrade, Brian knows where to go. PC Laptops, where we really do love Brian and you. PCLaptops.com.
The Cultural Hall wants you to help Utah Food Bank fight hunger statewide. Through your donations of food, time, or money, Utah Food Bank is able to distribute over 31 million meals annually to Utahns facing hunger. Even a $1 donation can be turned into $7.35 of goods and services. 1 in 5 children in Utah could go to bed hungry tonight, and 423,000 Utahns are unsure where their next meal will come from. By donating food at your local pantry or by visiting utahfoodbank.org, you can make a difference.
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, wherein we're visiting with Travis Morgan and Cameron Sawyer, talking all about Tim Timmerman, Hope of America. We'll talk about that actually more in the third block. I want to get to know you guys, and I feel like if we talk to you, Cameron, right now, because Tim Timmerman is a little bit autobiographical,
yes,
we are going to end up talking more about the film. So I'm going to put you at rest for just a second.
Okay,
we're going to talk to Travis a little bit.
Okay,
Travis, you're
good.
One of the producers of the film.
That's right.
But you're no stranger to Mormon. I'm trying to lead in a great segue to your YouTube video with
yep.
Talk a little bit about talk where people might know you from.
So I am the person who interviews Tom Cruise on Tom Cruise on Home Teaching. So if you've seen that YouTube video out there, that's me. Cam is the one who put that video together, and I'm the one who's on screen for that.
We heard it went viral in the Jell-O Belt.
Yeah.
So, in fact, someone said it went around the church
office
building.
Belt? Is that like Idaho?
Yeah, Idaho, Utah, Arizona.
Okay.
And then someone told us it went around the church office building, which I thought it was funny just to imagine, like, Henry B. Eyring watching Tom Cruise on Home Teaching.
You know the weirdest part about it, though? Henry B. Eyring teared up a little bit when he saw it.
I bet he did. I bet he got choked up.
You know, because let me not come at him a little bit. He's about the sweetest guy as speaking,
yes.
Right? But it seemed like I just want to give him a big box of Kleenex and a hug and just be like, listen, I know. I get you.
Yeah.
So sensitive.
Love it.
So tell me a little bit about yourself then, Travis. What's your deal? Where are you from?
I grew up in the Seattle area.
Okay.
LDS. Mm-hmm. And I...
Lots of Mormons at your Seattle high school?
Yes, okay. Actually. I mean, probably close to 10%.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So... tons of people. We did early morning seminary, had a huge class of that and everything. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it there.
And then decided that Utah was a thing and got to make the pilgrimage down to the BYU, right?
I did, yes. Yep. So I went to BYU freshman year and then went on my mission and came back.
Where'd you serve?
I served in Japan.
Okay. Which one?
It's called Sendai.
Okay.
Sendai,
of course it is.
Missions,
yeah.
North of Tokyo.
Is that where the earthquake was?
It was.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. And
a lot of people that you know affected by that?
Yes. In fact, but luckily everyone in the branches where I served were all okay.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Did you do that? Did you have that freak out moment where you're like, "Oh, people I love."
Yes, absolutely. Yep. And there were pages, you know, on Facebook and things that where people would actually sign in to say, "Yes, I'm okay. Yes, I'm okay." And everyone everyone from those branches was okay. I was very, very happy to see that.
How's the mission in Sendai?
Difficult.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm.
A lot of what?
So the country of Japan is 1% Christian.
Okay.
LDS is about 10% of that. So about 0.1% of the country.
Nice.
And then 99% of everyone else is Buddhist and Shinto.
Nice.
So they kind of have both. And largely unreligious, right? And so they really don't see religion as a big part of their lives.
Huh.
And it's something that they need.
Mm-hmm. How easy for a missionary. Yeah, I don't really find a need for that. All right, well,
yep.
What else can I do today?
Yes,
you need
exactly.
Help moving? Can I help you move?
That's about right, yep. So, it is really challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we... a lot of things like, you know, English classes and things like this, where you just try to get to know people on a person-to-person level.
Sure.
Versus just selling them on what they see as an American religion.
Oh, right? Really?
They say, I'm Japanese, I'm Buddhist, and you're American and you're Christian, and we just go our separate way.
Huh.
Yeah.
How fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So then you get back to BYU, then what? What's the plan? What's the deal?
So I got back to BYU, and I actually studied broadcast journalism at BYU.
You wanted to do the TV? Wanted to do the radio? What'd you want?
And TV was what I was looking at, and I went after I graduated and worked in TV news for About 4 years.
Where?
Home in Seattle.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Back at the station that you grew up watching?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Something went afoul here, Cameron, because he's not doing that anymore, I can tell. So
that's right. Well, I'm not either. I studied broadcast journalism. We actually were in the same program at BYU.
Okay.
But we're one semester apart, and I don't think we met.
No. No.
So we were in the same newsroom.
I recognized Cameron when we met later on. But,
in Los Angeles. Yeah, we were in the same ward, actually, in Los Angeles.
But we had never met, and we were only one semester apart.
Oh, my gosh.
BYU.
Well, and BYU has such an amazing broadcasting program, especially now. You guys probably didn't reap the benefits of the beautiful, brand-new, fantastic
building and
communications and broadcast facility down there now.
We were in the old HVAC down there.
Isn't that the thing, though? Doesn't it seem like that's life? Like, I look at things where it's like, yeah, that program would have been awesome if they would have done it not the year I was graduating from that school. Great.
Exactly.
Thanks, guys.
Just missed it.
Yep.
So you wanted to do that. You went and did that. You did that in Seattle, but then what?
So then what's interesting is I decided... I looked at all these different paths of what I could do within broadcast journalism, and what I really was looking for was something to get creative, something to get innovative, something to kind of push things forward.
What year are we talking right now?
I graduated in 2003 from BYU, and I worked for about 4 years in broadcast. So
07, okay.
07, and then I went to business school, which is not exactly the path that you might think of for doing, creative things, but I really wanted to innovate in the media space.
Cool.
And so I went to a school called the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University in the Chicago area.
Yeah.
And I loved it, absolutely loved it, and I studied media management and marketing.
That's awesome.
While I was there.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So now let's get to Cameron because he's biting at it. He's chomping at it. Could you tell? All right. So
it's
give me your story.
Man.
Here we go.
Seriously.
Come on. Let's get over here. You're a Utah born and bred guy, yeah?
I grew up in Orem, Utah.
Never heard of it.
Yeah.
Mormons?
Right in the
heart. Are there any Mormons there?
There are a few.
Yeah.
There are a few. Yeah. We had seminary was just one of the classes you took in school.
Right. You had to take, otherwise you were bullied
by
your peers, right?
Exactly.
Aren't you in seminary, dude? Is he all right? Maybe we need to talk to him.
Exactly.
We should invite him out of some mutual activities.
Come on. But it's funny. I grew up Mormon, but church wasn't a big part of my life.
Going to actual services?
I went to services just to socialize.
Right.
Honestly, I wasn't converted until I went on my mission. So I was a little bit on the edge, I guess, when I was in high school. And I didn't know anything about the church. I just went to church because I was a social person.
So societal pressure, kind of.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed the social aspect of it,
right.
But I didn't really sort of, I don't know, I wasn't converted until I went on my mission.
So how does that happen, though? Because nowadays, ever since we rose the bar for the missionaries,
the bar.
Folks like you and I maybe wouldn't make it on missions.
I don't know if I would have made it, yeah.
Right. Because back then, I've told this story here in the Cultural Hall before, where I'm in the MTC, and it dawns on me that the Book of Mormon is when Christ came to the Americas, and I'm like, do you guys know this? Did you guys know that what this is about?
Oh, I was learning all kinds of things.
Did you know? Hang on, hold on, I got to tell someone. Guys, did you know?
I thought someone was messing with me when they said the Holy Ghost. I was like, you're messing with me.
Right.
What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what the Holy Ghost was. And I went to church every week of my life, So I was just very oblivious to...
Where did you serve then?
I went to Canada, Winnipeg.
Okay. Nice. Is that nice?
It's like the DI of missions.
Okay.
It's just like...
Like a grab all? Like you never know what you're going to find there?
Yeah, you don't know what you're going to find every day. And
A ton of hidden gems.
That's right.
Sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's beautiful. When I went there, I was like, this is the ugliest place in the world. Shoot, I just offended all your Canadian listeners. But it ended up being beautiful.
Right.
There's just the prairies became beautiful to me, And so... it was a great place to serve.
I think cold when I hear Winnipeg. Am I correct?
It was one of the coldest missions in the world. And that year, it was negative 20 degrees or colder for 2 straight months.
That's
the
awesome.
First 2 months I was in my mission. I thought I was going to die.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I thought I was going to die.
I'm surprised you even lasted.
I know.
That sounds terrible.
We would run ladders in the street to warm our feet up.
You do what?
Run ladders in the street just to Do you know what a ladder is? You know,
no,
like
I don't.
Back and forth.
Oh, just
a,
okay.
You know, they call it ladders in school or whatever. Anyway, but
we call them laps. Orem. This guy from Wayne.
That's right.
Yeah. So it was fun. It was a great mission.
So then what? You come back and you're a semester behind this guy.
So then I come back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was a film major before I left on my mission.
Okay.
And then I go on my mission. I'm like, wait a minute. If you're Mormon, you're supposed to be a dentist or a lawyer. Yeah. Or going into medicine.
Right.
So I was like, I can't do film.
It's so you can provide for a family.
Yeah, which is actually kind of smart, honestly.
But for everyone where it's not smart when you try and cram yourself into a thing that isn't you.
Exactly. So I pushed it away. Went into broadcast because I was like, this is fun. I know I'm going to go to grad school.
Mm-hmm.
Did broadcasting just because it was fun.
Sure.
And was going to go to business school. And like, I was a few years out of my undergrad from BYU and I was like, I have to make movies. Like, that's all I want to do. That's mm-hmm. what I feel like I was born to do. So I'm going to freaking go back to film school and make movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little scary because I was in my late 20s.
Sure.
And
married at this point or single?
I was single, yeah. Thankfully. I wouldn't have done it had I been married, I don't think. So I went back to film school in Los Angeles and...
UCLA?
I went to Chapman University, and I made a short film called She's a Fox, and it did great on the festival mm-hmm. circuit. It helped launch Hailee Steinfeld's career.
Oh, cool.
She was nominated for an Academy Award on True Grit, the movie True Grit.
And she was also just recently in...
Edge of 17.
That's the movie I couldn't think of.
She did True Grit. I mean, that was her next project.
It was right after
She's a Fox.
Yeah. In fact, her mom called me. I'll never forget this. Her mom called me up and she's like, hey, Cameron, just wanted to thank you for believing in my kid. She just got the lead role in the Coen Brothers' next film. And I was like, she probably just has one line or something. And it was really the lead role.
Yeah.
And when I heard that, I just about dropped the phone.
Yeah.
I was like, this is going to change your life. I mean, a Coen Brothers movie is going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, so.
You're like, can she take me with you?
Yeah. And I was really, really happy because it helped our film. It was already doing well on the festival circuit.
Sure.
But then now we had a name actor
in
the film. So that helped create the heat to make this feature film that Travis and I did, Tim Timmerman, Hope of America. So Travis and I met up. We actually met up to develop another script that I wrote.
Okay.
It's the next movie that I'm going to do if this one does well.
Okay.
It's
not if, Cameron.
When, yes. Thank
when.
You. I like your optimism.
When this one does well.
I like your optimism.
This guy, come on.
So Travis and I, he helped me for a year to develop that story.
Wait, let's go back a little bit. How did it happen that you guys meet, right? You said you were in the same ward. So it was like, hey.
Oh, no.
I like
well,
movies. Hey, did you want to go home teaching?
Yeah.
And maybe we could talk about it. And how does it connect?
I was dating a girl.
Mm-hmm. And so was he, the same one.
Yeah. Well, Travis used to hang out at her friend's apartment.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know if we were in the same ward or if we just met there.
We ended up in the same ward. But yeah, essentially, I was unemployed.
Uh-huh.
And
that's right.
And the place that I was staying had no internet at all. And so I went to this apartment of the roommate of the girl that Cam was dating.
Yeah.
And just hung out like all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, well, you're not doing anything, Trav. Do you want to help me produce a movie?
He's like, you're right. And I'm willing to help you so long as you have internet wherever I'm going to help you.
Exactly.
Let me be there.
Yeah. So we developed that story for like a year. It's a really fun high school comedy set in Phoenix called Edmund Hurst, Stay Away from Selena or I'll Break Your Legs.
Okay.
And that's we're going to shoot it if this one does well.
I like to joke with Cam that Tim Timmerman, Hope of America, wasn't a long enough title, so we had to come up with an even longer one.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so. I mean, the two-word titles for movies, guys.
Oh, passe.
No.
Oh,
True Grit.
Come on.
No.
Exactly.
You need one that goes, like, when they do it on the marquee out in front of the theater, and the old-timey ones, that's like three lines long. They're like, is that three movies?
We don't want anyone to miss it. That's right.
So that's something that's written, but you guys are now working on this project.
Yeah.
It's called Tim Timmerman, Hope America. I want to take a break, and then I want to get all in on this, find out what the story is about, how it is autobiographical, where people can see it, how people can request to see it. I'm assuming there's some of that going on out there, too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll talk all about that coming up in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Utah's newest upscale catering company is now accepting bookings for the upcoming holiday and wedding season. Slick Rock Catering masterfully combines exquisite food, beautiful presentation, high-level service, and careful attention to create a special occasion that will be remembered. From award-winning food, event planning, decorating, to providing highly trained servers, Slick Rock Catering will help you make your next special event a huge success. Contact them at slickrockcatering.com.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the third block of the Cultural Hall. My guests are Travis Morgan and also Cameron Sawyer. And now let's dive in. Tim Timmerman, Hope of America. I need to know what this film is about.
Sure.
Autobiographical, at least in some ways, you said.
Yeah.
But what I love and notice just from the poster, it reminds me of... all of those kind of fun, like high school rompy kind of, you know, it's a comedy romp and hijinks ensue and you won't believe that this happened and that, and the main guy is gonna get away with it and you're gonna find out just how slick he is, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's so it's a high school comedy set in the 90s.
Okay.
And we purposely made the movie to sort of feel like an 80s or 90s movie.
Good.
And
we have Birkenstocks and socks.
What's that?
Are there Birkenstocks
with
socks on?
Yeah, all that stuff,
okay.
Man. Yeah,
Jerbos?
Yeah.
Are we rocking Jerbos at all?
We've got some Jerbos.
Okay.
We've got some Dare t-shirts.
Yes.
We've got some...
A lot of flannel going on.
A lot of flannel.
Yeah, tied around the waist.
Yeah.
Yep.
Henleys?
Do we have
Henleys on?
We've got Henleys. They're talking about Pearl Jam all the time. We actually have a Pearl Jam song in the movie.
You got permission? You bought the rights?
Yeah, Eddie Vedder was really great to work with and let us
hold on, let me pick
their...
up that name you just dropped. Hang on. There.
I should just keep dropping names the whole time. That's the only one I have to drop, though, man. That's
it. Already did Haley Seinfeld, and I let that one slide. But
shoot.
No, it's fine. Hang on. Here, let me get this shovel.
You called me out, man. You called me out. I didn't realize I was a name dropper.
No, you're fine.
Shoot,
no,
now I'm going to be like,
you're
going to
be super conscious. You'll be like, so I got the song from someone. You mean Eddie Vedder? Well, you said it, not me.
Yeah, and then later, by the way, later today, I'm going to be like, and I talked to Richie today.
You know, from the Cultural Hall.
From the Cultural Hall. I don't know if you've heard of him.
That's awesome. That's rare, right? Because a lot of these times in these films, it's like, cool, obscure band, an obscure song that has no relevance to me.
And we have some of that, like some obscure bands. But it's autobiographical. To me, my experience. You know, the reason why I wanted to make the movie is I'm looking around and looking at all these mega personalities, like especially politicians, you know, like Trump and... I'm trying to think of some names. Anthony Weiner, guys like this, like really big personalities who really love the spotlight.
Sure.
But oftentimes say things that, you know, don't really jive with people or whatever. And I was just like, man, that was me in high school. Like, you know, and I really started thinking about that and my experiences. And I was like, this would be a fun movie, especially right now. It's sort of like a political satire of sorts. And so that's what the movie is. It's the movie's about a student body president facing impeachment in the mid-90s when Clinton was facing impeachment.
Okay.
And he's ambitious, wants to go to Yale, but he just doesn't walk the walk. He talks the talk. And
so how did he get in? How'd you get in to be student body president?
How did I do it?
If this was the thing, right? If you were this guy.
I'm embarrassed to say it, but like, I started campaigning when I was a freshman.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the lines in the movie. It's like, if you really want to win, you have to start campaigning when you're a freshman.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, I would just get to know people. And I thought, you know, my political strategy was, 51% is all I need to win, you know? And I went up against a guy that I thought I was going to lose to because he was so good at imitating Michael Jackson. Like, he would dance like Michael Jackson.
Sure.
Oh, man.
I was like,
that's
he's going
to overcome, Kim.
That's a hard thing to overcome.
Well, and in the 90s, especially, right? Because it's your late 90s, early 2000s Michael Jackson.
I was
you'd been a shoe-in.
Yeah,
but.
I was like, I'm screwed. This guy knows how to dance like Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
So I'm done.
I wish that national politics were like that, right? Like, yeah, he's a pretty good speaker. Oh, but that guy, he can do a Bruno Mars like you wouldn't believe. So
exactly. Well, I lost in grade school to a guy that impersonated Pee Wee Herman. So I was like, it's going to happen again.
Oh, no.
You know. But anyway, managed to win, and I did it to pad my resume. I was like, I just wanted to look good on my resume. And
now, was Yale your future too? Is that what you wanted? Or you wanted?
I actually wanted to get into BYU.
Okay.
But I, you know, not very good grades and. So
and you're from Orem, so it was harder, too,
it was
right?
A harder, yeah. So I barely squeezed in, and I think it was because of this. But when I got elected, I was like, wait a minute, you guys want me to do work?
Right.
Like, I'm supposed to actually do something. And so, like, not only that, but, like, I hung out with potheads. You know, I was involved in this Assassins game. You'll see that in the movie. There's this motif where they're playing this game Assassins throughout the film. And your listeners probably know what this is.
I think we called it Mafia, but where you divide into families and then you shoot people.
Yes.
Yeah, I got arrested doing that.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I got into trouble playing that game.
Yeah.
And that was one of the, I could list off 15 things that I did where they wanted an impeachment hearing. And they were setting one up, and I nearly got impeached a few times.
Really?
So I was a terrible student body president. And I think I was telling you earlier, the guy the year before me was the best.
Uh-huh.
He was the best.
Give
president.
Me an idea. The best was what? What does that look like?
Well, first of all, he was, everyone thought, you know, he said, I'm going to be the president of the United States. And he was serious about it. And he was a sober guy.
Weirdest thing, Barack Obama, Orem High School. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I thought
he still might
Chicago
do it.
Right, but still.
But anyway, so like he really, truly wanted to be the president. And he took it seriously. Uh-huh. He carried a 3-ring binder around with him, was super organized. Uh-huh. So I was stepping into these huge shoes and I was like flying by the seat of my pants. And it was a mess the whole year, and they just wanted to get rid of me the whole time. So it makes for a good movie, though.
Is there redemption?
Yeah, I mean, you'll have to see the film.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, there's
is there redemption for Cameron Sawyer?
Oh, for me personally?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I went on a mission,
right.
And I started to have life experiences and realize that you shouldn't fly by the seat of your pants with everything. And
did you ever get in touch with most of your student body and be like, hey, listen,
I'm sorry, you guys.
Sorry about that.
I don't know. I mean, they liked me because I was fun, but
sure.
The administration didn't like me.
No.
You know,
yeah. What happened to the other guy that you ran against? Do you know? Do you have any idea what's going on with him now?
Yeah, I do. He's great. He has a great career. He's the voice of the... I shouldn't even say this. I could get sued.
No, you're fine.
He's the voice of Rio Tinto Soccer.
Oh, get out.
So he does the... Like, he announces... He's like the in-stadium announcer.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's a super talented guy.
Why would you get sued for saying that he's the voice guy for Real? That seems like the most paranoid.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, it's so specific. It's so specific, you know. Yeah, he's a public figure, so I guess.
Yeah, well, Andy, people can look up. You went to Orem High School in the 90s. Who was the guy that, you know.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And he's doing, I mean, that's a great job. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, announcing soccer games.
Yeah. That's awesome. So, so this whole film, you guys kind of got together and said, man, we got to do this.
Yeah.
Put it out.
Mm-hmm.
Hard, right?
Oh, man.
Oh, the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, by far.
Start to, it's now finished, edited, and ready to roll out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Start to finish. How long are we talking?
Gosh.
4 years, right?
Right.
3 or 4 years.
You started writing it, right,
mm-hmm.
Kim?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I took a job in Beverly Hills as a like an office secretary so that I could write in the morning and write at night. And that took a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And then I moved out to Utah. We were going to make the movie in California, but it was 4 times as expensive.
Sure. That's why more and more films are being made here in Utah.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So I moved out to Utah, and my little sister actually helped me raise the money. And we put together a business plan. We reached out to every wealthy individual that I knew and did a Kickstarter campaign that failed. actually.
Yeah.
It's a failed Kickstarter campaign.
Right, you hear the great stories about, like, cottage cheese for every American, and that passes, and they make, like, $2 million, and you're like, no, this is
Please.
A legitimate project.
Yes.
Nothing.
It's so frustrating, right? Because you see all these Kickstarter campaigns that are successful, and you're like, What are
they doing? Yeah. So we failed with that. And but we managed to, you know, scrape together enough money to get through production.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found an investor that helped us with post-production. And we flew all our actors in from Los Angeles. So that's another cool thing about this movie is it was regionally shot. So it was shot in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
But all the main actors are up and coming kids from Los Angeles, and they're super, super talented.
That's great. And some with Utah ties, right? I know, like,
yeah.
Christian Boucher.
Oh, several.
Yeah, we used a lot of Utah actors.
They just happened to already be relocated mm-hmm. out into California.
Yeah, and Utah has some really great talent. So it was awesome. We just had a great experience out here. And then we finished the movie. It did really well on the festival circuit. And VidAngel actually approached us and said, hey, we're
going to have to edit this. just teasing.
Yeah, they were like, hey, we want to help you release the movie because we feel it was like the perfect marriage because our movie it's made for anyone.
Right.
It's just a fun high school comedy
mm-hmm.
that anyone can enjoy. And a lot of VidAngel's users, in fact, the vast majority are just nationwide.
Right.
A lot of people think most of their subscribers are in Utah, but
right.
they have just a nationwide following of people that love their streaming service.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily Mormon folks,
it's
too.
It's not.
In fact, I think by and large, they would say that it's, you know, just Christian folks or just people who don't want to deal with the...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, some of the stuff in their films.
Exactly.
Oh,
so,
yeah. And I mean, mm-hmm. it fits perfectly because Tim Timmerman, it's set in Utah. It you know, mm-hmm. the storyline is in Utah. You can see the Utah mountains and everything, but it's not necessarily an LDS film. It isn't,
no.
It isn't a faith-based
Are there nods?
Film. It's just fun.
Are there nods to LDS stuff? Do we go, or is it void of that?
It's pretty void of that. But
yeah, mostly just Utah references,
just
really.
Just Utah references.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
mm-hmm.
the way they talk
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
some of the cultural things like asking people to dance in a really creative way.
And by really creative, you mean way too extravagant and expensive ways where it's like, yeah, I blew all the money on actually asking you to the date, so now we're not going to be able to.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like things like that. What else? Skiing. There's like a ski sequence
cool.
up at Brighton.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of, you know, a lot of regional things, but the movie's just a fun high school comedy.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it's called Tim Timmerman. Why?
Well, I wanted to. I picked a name that had an alliteration.
Okay.
Tim Timmerman. I liked it.
It sounds good. No, I love it. I just wondered if it was like.
Right?
Well,
yeah.
it's a tribute to.
It's no tribute to anything. We just liked the name. And
kindergarten buddy, Tim.
Yeah.
And then my kindergarten teacher, Mr. Timmerman.
Yeah. And Hope of America is. It's just ironic. He's not, you know, not in the movie. He's just the opposite. So, but it's political high school comedy.
And you said it's your first feature.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like having a baby and you're about ready to let the baby out in the world here in about a week or so.
Yeah, and that's just scary. That's scary for
sure. A lot of anxiety with it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, a lot of anxiety because we just don't, you know, we know that people on the festival circuit have liked it.
Like what? Where have we been festival-wise with it?
Yeah, Trav, do you want to talk about them?
Yeah, we did the Park City Film Festival right here in Utah.
That was last summer, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Our film festival premiere was on Cape Cod.
Oh, cool.
Cape Cod.
Great.
We won Best Comedy, Audience Choice for Best Comedy at
awesome.
That festival.
Yes, on our very first festival, which was really exciting. We also won Best Picture at the St. Louis Film Festival.
Awesome.
Which is super unusual for a comedy.
Right.
Because
yeah.
film festivals usually have these kind of angsty, artsy films.
Right.
And,
I like film.
Right.
Artistic and that makes me think in a different way
so
than
that's
I've ever
exciting. And,
yeah.
and we
Heartland.
Also, yeah,
Heartland.
The Heartland Film Festival, which is in Indianapolis, it's kind of viewed as sort of the Sundance of family-friendly films.
Clean films.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And how did you do there? What was the...
Great response. Mm-hmm. In fact, they had to open up additional screens for us.
Cool.
Because we sold out.
Nice.
So, really well received so far on the festival circuit. But You know, yeah, it's always nerve-wracking because you've got to get people to come.
Yeah, to San Francisco Indie Fest played last, actually played 2 weeks ago at the San Francisco Indie Fest, Hollywood Film Festival.
Yeah. So all over the place.
Yeah, all over
I want to ask a side, this is a non sequitur question, but Cameron, do you have Travis around just because of the way he smiles and it makes you feel good?
Like, yes.
Like do you
Travis,
know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like Travis to me, and I wish that people could see this interview. Maybe you can hear it in his voice, but... Aside, I'm sure, from being very talented at what you've done with the film, like, I feel like I would have Travis around just to be like, hey, Travis, I'm not feeling very good today. What? What's the matter, man? How can I, like, you just, it's a smile and a cheerful face that I'm just like, is he... He's got to be really that happy right now.
People laugh when they meet me after they've seen Tom Cruise on Home Teaching because I laugh in that a lot.
Yeah, and, that's like kind of the main thing.
And they're like, oh, that's your real laugh. Yes, it is.
I love having Travis around. Yeah. It's great.
Sorry, I didn't mean to segue from it.
Oh, no.
So a bunch of film festivals. Now it's going to come out. Tell people how, I'm assuming here in, like you said, the Jell-O Belt.
Yes.
We'll be able to see it actually out in theaters. If they're not there, how can they... Request to see it.
Yeah, Trav, do you want to talk about that?
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, so basically, we're opening just on a handful of theaters on March 3rd, right, you know, here in Utah. Kind of north to south, though. I mean, we've got, you know, all the way from, you know, Logan down to St. George and everything in between. But if you're not there, the best thing to do is actually go to our website.
Okay.
It's timtimmermanmovie.com.
And just Tim Timmerman was already taken, huh?
Yeah, it's an artist.
Yes,
there's a
really?
Guy named Tim Timmerman. Actually, do you know what's crazy? We've had like 4 or 5 Tim Timmermans like our page and email us. How do I see this movie? I guess they're all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
But there's this artist that, in fact, when we launched the movie, he had the on Google, his page was at the top of the list. Now it's like buried a little bit. But,
he's just ticked. This
guy. Yeah, he's like, oh, shoot.
It's not even about me, man.
Man, is he getting a lot of web traffic right now.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so timtimmermanmovie.com. Okay. I mean, you can check out the artist's art if you want as well on his website. Mm-hmm. But and then you can just request to have it come to your, have it come to your city.
Your city, cool. And, you know, what's cool is if it does well in Utah, and Utahns love movies, and so we're really hoping they come out to this. But if it does well here... we have plans to roll it out nationwide. We will have the ability to do that.
Right.
This is kind of a test market for
us. That opening weekend, for people that don't know, but we certainly have talked about it here in the Cultural Hall a bit, go the opening weekend.
Yes.
If you like films like this, like what we've been describing, something that's accessible to everyone, something that's comedic, something that can be enjoyable and you can take your whole family to, go out on the opening weekend because those numbers typically are what drives whether or not it disappears and no one ever sees it again. Or it becomes a bigger market kind of thing.
Absolutely, yes.
So people can find out where the theaters are here in Salt Lake, too, at timtimmermanmovie.com?
It's almost every Cinemark and Megaplex in Utah Valley and Salt Lake Valley.
Oh, good. That's awesome. And that opens up March 3rd.
March 3rd.
Is there anything that I didn't ask you guys that I need to know about this movie?
Oh, man.
I mean, there's a million things, right? The stories that these scenes could tell.
I'm trying to think. Anything you can think of, Trav?
People who they just walk out of the theater with a big smile on their face, and that's kind of unique these days, right? You know, with you get a lot of movies that are kind of dark and angsty and heavy and this is just the opposite. I mean, it is lighthearted, it's fun, and like you say, it's accessible.
You know what's interesting is we're opening up the same weekend as Logan, which is the what's it called? X-Men movie, and they've decided to make that movie rated R.
Okay.
Intentionally. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. We feel like this provides people with a good option.
PG.
It's actually, we were really surprised, but it got a PG-13 rating.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's because they're in high school.
Yeah, we were super surprised. We were really surprised by that rating. It's probably the cleanest PG-13 movie in history.
I'll be interested to find out why it's PG-13.
Yeah. There's only like a few nudity scenes and like just some blood. Like F-bombs.
Yeah, exactly. The minimum amount of F-bombs, but it's accessible, you know?
Right.
No, I mean, some of that stuff is so arbitrary, right?
Crazy.
Like you can have 3, but not 4. You can have this, but not that, and... For some reason, that determines between a PG or a PG-13 or a PG-13
and not. And it's PG-13.
Well, maybe that'll play better. I don't know.
We'll see.
Right? Who knows? It's called Tim Timmerman, Hope of America. You can find out more about it at timtimmermanmovie.com. Opens up on the 3rd of March. It's been good talking to you guys. I want to ask you guys a few questions before I let you go.
Sure.
First of all, do you guys have callings right now in your ward? And if so, what are they?
I'll start because I have the greatest calling. I was just released as our ward mission leader, and I am now our ward newsletter coordinator.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you have to make the paper newsletter every Sunday morning, right?
No. It's like the monthly. It's like a newsletter. Like,
okay.
Like a little news magazine. Yeah. I'm not even the program coordinator.
Okay.
Yes.
That's the program.
Yeah.
See, I got it.
Exactly.
I don't even have a weekly. It's just a once a month kind of thing.
Nice. You put it all together. Do you have, do a little message and that whole thing?
And we get Bishop Rick message. We're actually launching a ward newsletter, so I haven't even issued the first issue.
Oh.
Oh, that's going to be good.
Of the West
I'm like waiting
first
for that
Gazette.
Track.
Yeah.
Will there be digital copies made available?
Oh, of course.
Well, good.
Because
some people don't need the paper.
Digital.
Just send it straight to me.
I'm in LA, so we have to be eco-friendly.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, you just made me think, by the way, I had a roommate at BYU that used to wear glasses and part his hair to church because he was hoping to get the ward clerk calling. He called it the ward nerd. And they never called him.
That's why he dressed that way.
So I've never been the ward clerk, by the way, and I don't think I ever will.
That's very clear, Cam. Yes.
But
organized.
That's not my specialty. But I'm currently the Elders Quorum, one of the Elders Quorum instructors.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So like once a month you go in and teach it. Nice. That's great.
A good calling.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a solid calling.
Affect some change and it's only once a month.
That's right. I teach this weekend actually.
Well,
yeah.
Should we cut this off pretty short?
Cut it off, man. I got to go prep.
Second question. If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that actually exists in the church or make one up, what calling would you pick?
That's a good question.
My gosh. Let's see here.
See, right? Look how happy he looks, right? He's like, thank you so much for asking me that question. It's like, I didn't even mean to, but you're welcome.
Yeah,
thank
exactly.
You. I think it might be the editor of the Westchester First Ward Gazette. Yeah.
That's perfect.
I feel like I've had all these really fun callings, actually. I mean, back when we had activities co-chair, I was always activities co-chair and in singles wards, FHE co-chairs.
Oh,
and
yeah.
This, like all the fun stuff. That's what I've always done.
That's great.
Yeah.
This is where he says ward clerk, by the way.
That's right.
Yeah, I should say ward clerk.
Start parting your hair. Yeah.
Exactly. The best calling I ever had was ward mission leader, and I would just take that.
You do that again?
Yeah, just because, I don't know, I just think that's where the fun happens. That's where the excitement happens.
Cool.
With the church. Yeah.
All right, last question, gentlemen, and then I'll get you out of here. What is your favorite part of your faith?
For me, I'm going to say my favorite part of my faith is that it is a very practical faith.
Right? Okay.
So when I was an intern in Washington, D.C. back in undergrad, people were really surprised because they sort of met me as an academic, as an intellectual first. And then they found out that I was religious, and that I was a man of faith. And they would ask me many questions about this. How can you have faith? What is this? And for me, it's very practical in that I have very specific spiritual experience. I feel the Holy Ghost and I can, and I can point to that to say, this is why I believe, right? That it's when other people would answer this question in these conversations, they would say more things like, well, I see God in various, events in my life or in this and that. But it seemed more like ethereal, not quite as tangible, right? Just kind of philosophical or out there or things like that. But for me, my faith is very tangible, very practical. I have these experiences and this is why I believe.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
You should have gone first. No, I'm just kidding.
Amen. mine is just quite simply that, Mormons are just friendly.
Mm-hmm.
We're just friendly. You know, and you talk to anyone, just about anybody, you know, what is your experience with the Mormon church or with anyone who's a member of the church? And they say, you guys are the nicest people, you know, and that's, to me, that's, you know, charity and, you know, love for our fellow men is the most important thing. And so I feel like if we're doing well with that, then we're doing pretty well.
All right. Before I let you go, kind of in my memory, I was reminded of two things that I harass every sort of film folk that come in here. Mm-hmm. First of all, when you're doing a film, either locally here or if it's a Mormon, you know, or LDS based film, mm-hmm. you got to put me in with one line. I don't want more than one line. But I've been in several films,
yeah,
where it's one line, almost to the point. I don't want to say that. That I'm a full-blown Easter egg, but I'm, mm-hmm. I want to get to the point where it's like, hey, here's a film made by a Mormon person. Where is Richie in that film? And
yeah.
I don't want more than a line, unless you're like, there's no other person that could do this role than
yeah.
you. But I just want a line where it's like five words, where it's like, he's over there, and that's it. And then, you know, I'm on set for an hour, 2 hours.
Yeah. Yes.
I got the thing, then I'm done.
So you want to be like Ron Howard's brother.
Right.
He like shows up in everything.
That's
and
true.
He says
yep.
one
that's
thing.
It's just in, out, but it's a little thing where you're like, where are they going to put him
yeah.
in? So that's one thing.
Okay,
so don't
okay.
forget that.
Yeah.
Especially when you come here to Utah.
Yeah, all right.
Easy
yep.
to find.
Mm-hmm. Noted.
The second thing is, this is not at all like the film that you have done,
uh-huh.
But a suggestion for another film, should you
oh.
ever want to go
all right.
Documentary style.
Yeah.
I would love, and I'm willing to volunteer for this as well, a documentary about a MTC district 20 years later. Or 15
oh,
years later,
gosh.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's guys and girls, if depending on the makeup of it.
Yeah.
They, you know, in mine, in particular, mine, you know, most of us went to Cleveland. A couple went to Oklahoma City.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, you got pictures from when they first went out, right? And you're able to talk about it, little interviews with everyone. And then it's the return.
Wow. And a documentary. That's
yeah,
interesting.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what did you do? Oh, that was a great experience. Oh, I'm
yeah.
not a member of the church anymore. I left when this. Or,
oh,
you know
that
I'm doing
that's,
this.
You know.
And then the
like
final
that.
Thing is everybody getting back together as an MTC district.
Mm, so you can see how bald they are now.
Right?
Yeah.
You can see how much weight they put on
yeah.
now. Because, like... I don't know that mine would be the perfect example of this, but like I think about mine and you know, there was one who he left the mission because of just a crazy amount of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
There was one who at some point in his mission got holiness to the Lord tattooed on his back in the same font as you see on the temple.
Oh my.
Right? Another one who is a very accomplished concert pianist.
Yeah.
One who stocks Little Debbie snack cakes
yeah.
at gas stations, right?
Yeah.
And so it's people from
wow.
all over
yeah.
to come together and talk about what their experience was while we're there, mm-hmm. what they've done in the meantime, and then be reunited with everybody else.
I love it. I love it.
I tried a Kickstarter for it, and it failed. So just you know. Anyway, let's wrap this up. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat on the back row.